Welcome to the 267th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome, and thank you for listening. I just came off one of my best birthday weekends ever. I got to visit Addie Delaney Minor, a registered dietitian nutritionist, my daughter, son-in-law, and yes, my new grandson, Caleb. And he's doing quite well, thank you. A little over 10 weeks, and he's smiling, and he's my new best buddy. So it was a great weekend to spend with them. And Addie's back at work now, and so you can get all your registered dietitian questions answered. And I got to tell you that they are growing a beautiful, healthy, plant-based baby boy. And he's doing really well, and they're all getting very well adjusted. So it was great fun to be with them. Can't wait to turn around and go back. But the rest of this week, since I got back, you know, it's always the, you know, come back to reality after a great weekend like that. And it's been a little bit of a hard transition. You know, I lost my dog, Samantha, and trying to go on, and it's been a little frustrating. There's been some crazy things that happened. I applied to a couple German Shepherd rescue sites, and the theme for today, it comes up with some, you know, is basically crazy questions that people ask, and why do people ask questions, and do we ever really think about some of the crazy things we do as humans? And starts with the dogs and ends with vaccinations and people. And maybe you'll find some of this humorous. Maybe you won't. Maybe it'll insult you. Maybe it won't. Maybe it'll make you think a little bit about what's going on in the world. And maybe it'll change your view. Maybe it won't. But, you know, here goes. So I applied for this couple German Shepherd rescues. And, you know, on the rescues, there are all these dogs. And nobody has a home. And we need people desperately. Yet nobody can process our application because of COVID. Now, I have no idea what processing and using reading and looking on email has to do with a virus, but it's affected everything that people do. So if you don't want to do anything, you can blame COVID for any problem that you're actually having. But one of the questions that was sent to the references, I think I had to list 6 or 8 references for one site, and one of the references was my nurse that I used, so I got to see the questions that came back. And they ask, what was my greatest achievement? Now, I don't know what that has to do with being a rescue, you know, person for an animal. I can understand, where do you live? Do you have a fenced-in yard? How do you take care of your dog? Have you done obedience training? You know, all these kind of crazy. But what was my greatest achievement? And I was trying to think, what achievement would make me a good dog owner? You know, and what answer would she might put, you know, if you were an Olympic pole vaulter, does that make you is that a great achievement that would make you a good dog owner? You know, having a child is one of my greatest achievements, but would that make me a good dog owner? I don't know. Being vegan, that might not make me a good dog owner, because depending on how you feel about what you feed your dogs. But crazy things like that, you know, that people, you know, again, tie themselves up with questions that just muddy the waters. You know, when you talk to physicians, you know, we were trained in the era of give these vaccinations to people to save them from awful, awful diseases. We were never taught about the prevalence of these diseases or how they were affecting the world at the time or the side effects of these vaccines. But you can ask a doctor, how do you feel about vaccines? And I can tell you that 100% of the time, most physicians are going to give the correct answer for the test. Just like our boards, you know, there's a lot of questions on the boards that I would not get right if I answered according to what is reality versus what is pharmaceutically driven. But maybe it might be better off if you were going to ask your physician, what's the mechanism of these various vaccines? Are they all alike? Are they live viruses, attenuated viruses? How does it help? What kind of viruses are given, to a perfectly healthy person hoping to make them immune to other viruses? You know, when you start to think about it, you start to question some of these things. You know, if you ask your doctor, most doctors aren't plant-based. You know, you might say, how do you feel about being plant-based? And you'll probably get a stuttering answer if you, you know, or everybody needs meat, or maybe they'll tell about, you know, keto or low carb, or just say eat healthy. That's usually the box answer, eat healthy and exercise. But maybe you can, you know, ask a little bit, you know, further to your physician, do you believe that eating plant-based could actually reverse heart disease or reverse lifestyle diseases, and see what they say. I think it would be a very, very interesting question. I've heard physicians stutter and stammer. I think it's good. I believe in eating a lot of vegetables, but I couldn't do it. I don't like broccoli. But I think it's a good question to answer. Ask your physician just so that you know where you stand. A lot of people say, well, I'm almost a vegan, right? I'm 68% vegetarian or 60, and I have no idea how you calculate that other than perhaps, you know, if you look at your plate and, you know, the standard American diet is a meat and a starch and a vegetable. So that makes you, what, 33% or 60% plant-based, you know. So I'm not sure how some of these things really, really go out. And again, you know, well, just, you know, how does it work that we give somebody a RNA, you know, and a genetic material attached to a virus that causes the common cold is what they're going to do with the SARS-CoV vaccine, and expect an immune response through antibodies to be a good thing when we know more and more that it's not the antibodies that actually prevent the disease. It's really the T cells or the lymphocytes in the immune reaction that works, and we can't really measure those. So we're giving somebody a virus, part of a virus hooked on, or RNA hooked onto a virus, hoping to get an immune response. An immune response is another word for an inflammatory reaction. So if we give people parts of things that maybe recognizes as, you know, even the regular old, you know, coronaviruses that cause the common cold, how do we know that there's not going to be a giant immune response when you're actually exposed to the SARS-CoV-2 virus? So, you know, those are questions to ask your doctor when he insists or she insists that, you know, you line up to get a vaccine. Somebody's got to answer these questions. And I think that the biggest problem I see here lately is nobody's asking the specific questions. You know, why do we put a swab down somebody's nasopharynx, you know, through your nose into the back of your throat that's about 7 inches long to get a good sample to see if somebody might be SARS-CoV carrier, asymptomatic, or if you actually have had the virus, when if it's so contagious that just walking by somebody in the street puts us at risk to the point where we all have to wear a mask? So if it was so contagious, you know, just exhaling onto the swab should do it, right? If it's that dangerous. But we're going to go, you know, plucking in around somebody's, you know, through their nose, through their sinus, back through their sinuses, cause all kinds of risk in people that may have bleeding or clotting disorders or deviated septums to get a sample, because we can't really culture this very easily. And I know here comes the one that could get, you know, egg thrown all over the podcast and get me all kinds of negative reviews. But why are we judged, the quality of our citizenship judged by whether or not we're wearing a mask? When in fact, it makes it more difficult to judge character when people have a mask on. You know, people rob banks with masks on, so you can't really see who they are. You can't tell facial expressions. You really can't read people, whether they're smiling, happy, sad, whether they're in distress or not with a mask on, but yet we're going to judge them as a good citizen, whether they have a mask on or not. It's like the white hat versus black hat type, of scenario, when there really, 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 really has not been any kind of study suggesting that wearing a mask is going to protect society. We know all kinds of things that, you know, the sputum comes out of the side of the mask, the aerosols come outside, you get the mask wet, it becomes a nidus for catching your own viruses and bacteria. And there's not been one study one study that has shown a decrease in transmission or reversal or decline in COVID disease because we're wearing masks. Not one. Not one. People infer, people try to take numbers and cherry pick, but there's not one. So before you write in here all angry, if you do write me, I want you to cite the journal article, the page, and the date to defend. And I want you to tell me about the study population and the statistics used and how they picked the people and where they were and how they walked, because none of that has been done. It's all inferred. And, you know, even if you look back through our so-called medical experts, wear a mask, don't wear a mask, you know, so most mask policies are now directed by your local grocery store or big box store. So there's a lot of good data going on there. So, you know, whether if it makes you feel good to wear a mask, by all means, wear a mask. You know, I'm not saying take your mask off, but I also, you know, don't judge other people if they're willing to take the risk or not, because you really do at this point. Data shows you got to be in a room with somebody close up 30 minutes, them breathing and coughing and being symptomatic. You're not going to catch it from walking by somebody that's a carrier at the current time. And, there, you know, as far as the kids go, there's been a lot of studies looking in, you know, in France before, you know, the isolation started and the daycares of essential workers, where essential workers kids go, it's very low in kids, very low in transmission to adults. So, and you know, again, what we're doing to our children, is outright terrible, to send a little kid that is trying to trust a stranger for his education. And yet he can't see him because they're behind a mask, they're behind a class, and they can't touch anybody. One of the things that we're really lacking, and I continue to see in my office, is people are so distraught because they can't see their family members. They're afraid, or the family's afraid, so nobody wants to get near each other. The lack of touch. We're humans. You know, people need interaction and touch, and there's much more that goes on. You know, again, social development, brain development starts in early childhood with attachment from being close and touch receptors. We have, you know, emotional response receptors on our skin. Just think, if somebody gives you a firm handshake or a weak handshake, when's the last time you had a handshake? You know, does it do it for you? Is a hug better than elbow pump? Come on now. You know, it's like if you don't care about another individual enough to hug them, then chances are that's really not giving them any kind of emotional, you know, an emotional support. And again, you know, facial expressions, extremely important when it comes to communication. So we have these little kids going to school that probably lack communication skills anyway, because they've been raised on iPads and by video games and emails and text. And now we've taken away their ability to feel any kind of touch, to feel, learn a handshake, learn facial expression, how to read people. So, you know, we're really developing a society that's going to be a little scary here. We're being driven by protocols. I had a gentleman come into my office that was a young man. He had a valve surgery from a congenital valve problem. There was, he had some vision changes. And so people think, oh, he may have had a stroke. So there's protocol was enacted as if he were 80 years old. So all these radiation-involved tests were done, ultrasounds done, CT scans done, looking at his vasculature. The reality of it is, at his age, you know, even if he smoked cigarettes, he'd have trouble being that blocked up that he'd need that much x-rays, you know, and DNA-damaging procedures done, looking for the source of this vision change, which may have come from the suture line of his valve surgery that is easily treated with a simple aspirin for a few weeks. But because people worried about, you know, not asking the right questions again, worried about, you know, perhaps not doing the right thing, maybe because you can do more of these tests, lots of these tests were done. people are afraid to eat fruit all the time when they come into the office. They're worried, oh, I'm a diabetic. Can I eat fruit? Am I eating too many grapes? Is that what's causing me to be fat? Are bananas bad? Yet people take all the supplements that these fruits and vegetables have naturally. So everybody's okay with taking vitamin C, but if they're afraid to eat an orange, they'll take potassium supplements, but they're afraid to eat a banana. They're afraid of a date, but, you know, magnesium tablets are okay to take. So, you know, again, we have to ask ourselves when people, you know, again, these are, you know, you get on a website and then the bottom is all about selling supplements instead of eating the whole foods. You know, what's it really all about? Can't we get enough eating? You know, did humans evolve that we need supplements? Our food is so bad. People go to exercise, you know, and I heard this, you know, people, going to go from the couch to a boot camp type of workout where if you don't come out, or, you know, I've done it myself, you know, you start a weightlifting program. If you don't come out so sore you can't stand up, then you didn't get your money's worth, or you really weren't doing enough. So we beat ourselves up for and doing exercises that we probably won't do in real life for any reason. Jumping at 50 up in the air, all of a sudden doing burpees is probably not something that you're going to do the rest of the day. So it might be, you know, to go from the couch to burpees might be a good way to hurt various things. In case you don't know what a burpee is, it basically is you drop to the ground, do a quick push-up, then push yourself back up to a stand from a squat to a standing position and jump in the air, and then go back down, squat, push-up, back up, jump. And you can see that if people don't squat but they bend over to try to do it fast, they're going to hurt their back. If their Achilles are tight or their calves are tight, they get a good chance of hurting their Achilles. They pull their arms up to jump up in the air. They'll probably pull the rotator cuff out, but it's all in the name of a boot camp. And if you can do a boot camp, then, and you can direct one of those things and break people, then you're going to make them better. So, you know, I got to question some of these things, that aren't tailored to the individual. The question might be, what would you like to get out of this exercise program? What do you do during the day? When you're not exercising, what's your job? Is it, you know, climbing telephone poles, or is it sitting at a desk? Are you sitting all day long with your hip flexors being very short? So if you go up and you start to, you know, stand up real quick and do a burpee, you're going to pull your hip flexors, pull your back out. Are you in high heels during your, you know, or heels in your work, so that when your feet actually get on the ground to do the burpees, you're going to pull your Achilles? You know, what would you like to do? Do you want to learn to jump high? Is jumping not that big of a deal for you? So, I mean, these are a couple questions that I think are reasonable for us to ask, that we just don't seem to ask some of these blind or blatant questions. You know, I just came back from Houston. So we flew from Tampa to Houston. And while I was on the airplane, I started thinking about all the things you touch and all the things you're exposed to in a normal day. And, you know, I kind of got the giggles, because most of the time in your past, if you think about it, and you went to a doctor and you maybe had a sore throat, and the doctor would say, you know, you say, do I need antibiotics? And they say, no, you don't have a bacterial infection. You just have a virus. You just have a virus, and there's no real treatment for a virus. It just has to run its course. Same thing with the flu. You might be getting the flu. Stay home, drink plenty of fluids, and it'll run its course. It's just the flu. It's just a virus. And most people go past it. You know, you get a cold in the wintertime. You maybe get a cold in the fall when kids go back to school. They bring all the germs home. Same thing in the spring. You know, down here, we blame the Canadians when they come down in the fall, you know, to Florida, and they bring, you know, a new set of microbes down, and people get viruses, but then you get past it. And some people get more colds than other people because of their immune response. Sometimes if you have chronic lung disease, it can be quite nasty, and you can, you know, a viral infection can lead to a pneumonia. So it can be serious. And you need antibiotics. But, you know, nobody questions why they got it, and nobody blames anybody else for why they got it. We don't, you know, put roadblocks up to block the Canadians from coming to Florida so they can't bring us down a virus. There's not, you know, I've heard of people that can't go to Massachusetts from Florida without getting COVID tested and then tested there and quarantining. We don't do that, you know, for the in regular times, but we're doing it now. So, but if you look at all the things you touch, you know, got out of the car and the railing on the people mover, the buttons in the elevator, the arms on the chairs that you sit in, both on the plane and while you're waiting, the belts that you put your, and the bags you put, you go through TSA screening, the doorknobs that you touch, the counters that you lean on, the screens that you touch to get your tickets, the screens that you touch it, you know, to buy things. You know, think about it just even during the day, how many doorknobs you touch, how many handles do you touch, where do you put your hands when you sit down at various chairs along the way, you know, as you go, the carts that you touch, the produce and the cans that you pick up, the mailbox, you know, that you touch, keyboards, other people's keyboards, you know, when we do a marathon or an Ironman, you're outside all day long. We swim in water that's not, you know, it's a river water, and you come out and you change your clothes, or somebody helps you change your clothes. People pee in that water, and, you know, and your hands aren't, you don't wash your hands before you change your clothes, and you grab something to eat and you go on to ride your bike, and, you know, your nose is running, and people are handing you bananas, and then you finally get back in and you change your clothes again, and people hand you sunscreen and you grab that, you grab something else to eat, you grab some water, you fill up your water bottle. People are high-fiving you all over the place. Marathons, kids are high-fiving you, giving you, you know, food. People take orange slices from strangers along the road, and, you know, the water's filled up. How? And nobody dies from infections. You know, so we're exposed to a tremendous amount of microbes and viruses during those days, and everybody lives. Was it coronavirus? No, it's not coronavirus, but were they viruses and microbes? Yes. And through doing that, you know, triathletes and endurance athletes are some of the healthiest people I know, because they've got probably a very wide exposure to these microbes. They're getting their own little vaccination protocol as they go, just as they have little exposures. So, you know, I think when we, you know, we're so panicked over, you know, this virus that is causing, again, people to become depressed and, you know, isolated. And we have to really question, you know, why are we so afraid of all this? It's just crazy. We can't live in a bubble. The little boy that lived in the bubble wanted out of the bubble because it was no quality of life. And so I think that, you know, just think about some of these things and ask questions. And you know, again, before we all fall in line like sheep, following some fear, you know, from statistics and rules that people aren't scientists are making, or people that are biased that are making, just ask the questions. All I'm asking, just ask the question for yourself. And if you get an answer you like and it causes you to go hide in the closet, fine. But make sure you ask the question, and make sure you listen for other people when they say, you know, ask the details from behind. When they say they said, who are they? Where did they get their information? Maybe look at the study. Where did it actually come from? Do a little fact checking on your own. You might be surprised at what you actually see. People that are so-called experts or pundits may be biased in ways that you had no idea. And before you know, you get all bent out of shape that I haven't done anything about plant-based nutrition or even endurance, I want to go on that, talk a little bit about blood pressure. When you exert yourself, your blood pressure naturally goes up. When people, we do a stress test on people, their blood pressure goes up, and we don't even call it abnormal until it gets to 220. And then as soon as we stop the exercise, the blood pressure comes back down. So if people take their blood pressure during exercise or weightlifting, your blood pressure can go very high. It goes up, but then it comes back down. We worry about people's blood pressure if it stays up continuously. You know, that's a problem if it's up. But your blood pressure is going to fluctuate based on your level of activity, based on your sympathetic tone. So if you're running, weightlifting, bearing down to lift a weight, holding your breath, your sympathetic tone increases, your blood pressure is going to increase. And then, when that activity is over, your blood pressure goes down. The more time you spend in a high sympathetic state, the higher your blood pressure may very well be. So, if the blood pressure is high, one of the things to do is, breathe through your nose, breathe through your, do some nice diaphragmatic breathing, slow everything down, breathe in, hold it, breathe out. And think about what's going on that's driving your sympathetic tone. And a lot of people will meditate and their blood pressure comes down. And then as soon as they're done meditating, they go back right into their old sympathetic lifestyle. And it's like, no, you got to keep that. It's like going to church and you're coming out and you get mad in the parking lot. It really didn't do you much good to listen to that nice sermon on how you should love your neighbor if you're going to yell at them when they pull out in front of you. So we have to practice this and practice this and practice this to be able to keep our you want to keep more in this parasympathetic, because when you breathe through your diaphragm, you activate your vagal nerve, puts you more in a parasympathetic state. You could deliver more oxygen to your tissues. It's all good. The other thing that I question is sometimes, we know that if we fast people for 40 days, their blood pressure will come down, taking all the salt away from them. But some people are doing intermittent fasting and their blood pressure actually can go up. And it's like, why would this be? I don't have any food in my stomach. Why could my blood pressure go up? Well, again, back to the sympathetic tone. But if we're actually trying to reverse some vascular disease as well as the sympathetic tone, and we know that if the endothelial cell is damaged and it's producing less nitric oxide, which lets the blood vessel constrict, then eating vegetables, specifically greens, that mix with our saliva and the microbes in our tongue to produce nitric oxide, if we don't eat those, that medicine's not going to be there. So just like you didn't take your blood pressure medicine, if you take blood pressure medicine, if you don't eat your greens, then you're not going to produce that nitric oxide to actually help reverse that vascular disease. So yeah, doing a fast, I think is fine. Certainly a fast gets the sodium out of your diet, so lets the volume in your system come down. Most people become a little bit dehydrated when they're fasting over time, depending on how and their blood pressure comes down. But to really reverse that vascular disease, if you're not fasting for 40 days, you might be better off eating those greens. So I make the suggestion to people is to eat those greens, on a frequent spread out basis, just like you would take if you were taking a medicine 3 times a day, that make sure you get those greens in so your nitric oxide will be produced. Ultimately, the plaque will start to go away, the blood pressure will come down, and things will be much better over time. And truly, you will reverse your blood pressure problems, not just temporarily take the volume out from fasting and being in a controlled environment. So I think that's the best advice for long-term reversal of high blood pressure is to certainly get the sodium out of your diet, but also get the greens and the nitric oxide producing in your diet on a regular basis so that your blood pressure can come down, but also not worry about it so much that you drive your sympathetic tone when your blood pressure is elevated after a normal elevation after exercise. So, be okay with your blood pressure can go up after or during your exercise, and then it'll come back down, and it'll fluctuate during the day according to what happens to you and how you react to it. And if things like somebody pulling out in front of you in church causes your blood pressure to go up, then you got to rethink, your thought process. I've alluded to Jill Bolte Taylor, who talks about, the dopamine response and the adrenaline response when something happens to you that's, abrupt and lasts for about 90 seconds. But after that, you get to choose. You get to choose if you're going to be angry at a stranger that pulled out in front of you for, 10, 15, 20 minutes, half hour, and let your blood pressure go up, or it happens and your blood pressure goes up and then it goes back down because you let it go. So those are things to kind of think about with regards to your blood pressure and how you might affect that. The other thing, there was a question on, where should you go as an older person with your body mass index? We know that roughly 18 to 24.8 is the normal range. 18.6 to 24.8 is a normal range for body mass index. some people will argue that very muscular men are going to have a higher body mass index, and they'll have a lower fat mass. It's really not true. It's kind of like when people say, I lost inches, for the most part, you know, because they squeezed the tape measure tighter, but they really didn't lose any weight, you know. So there are some people that are very, very muscular and their BMI is going to be up. But if you look at most of those people, they're carrying extra fat mass, and that extra fat mass also is going to produce things like tumor necrosis factor, inflammatory compounds, insulin-like growth hormone, platelet clotting factor. So we really want to get rid of the extra fat mass to get people down close to a normal BMI. Unfortunately, the older we get, the more muscle mass and bone mass we lose, just as a natural thing. You lose less if you're plant-based. You lose less if you're exercising. But, you know, there's going to be some loss over time. And so that just translates into an increased fat mass. So 24.6, 24.8 in a woman may actually be a significant amount of fat left. So we actually have to look at the individual, and then we have to look at the individual and the body composition and how we would like to change things. So we want to put more muscle on people, and you can put more muscle on at any age, but we don't want to eat fat to gain weight to say we either, you know, people are worried about being too skinny. It's like, oh, my BMI is dropping. I don't want to lose any more weight. But we don't want to put fat on people either, because that's not going to help them. So the idea is, how do we exercise, increase the calories so they can gain weight, and their, you know, their body mass index will stay above the 18.6. But also we want to get people on the other end to get their body mass index down and get the fat mass down, because those things are what's driving the problem. And in reality, we're looking not at really weight loss, but we're looking at reversal of lifestyle diseases and look at reversing metabolic changes. So we're trying to increase mitochondrion cells by exercising so that we can process more glucose, which will ultimately result in weight loss, but will also better glucose metabolism. We want to get the fat out of the cells to improve glucose metabolism, the fat out of the liver, fat out of the muscle. We want to reverse vascular disease by eating the nitric oxide producing foods, letting the plaques go away, so reversing disease. So by eating more greens and salads, you're going to lose weight. Great. But the big thing is that we're also giving you more nitric oxide that you can reverse your vascular disease, decrease inflammation. By increasing more fruits and vegetables, you're going to lose weight, but you're also going to decrease your inflammatory markers. So it's all a win-win situation. So it's not necessarily just about a weight number. Although it's a, you know, it's a general guideline, but it's about what processes do you have that we need to reverse? Are we looking to reverse your blood pressure issues, your diabetes, your autoimmune disease? Then we get to specific, because just losing weight's not going to change some of those things. And as we know from a keto diet, that if you lose weight with a keto diet, but you're putting all fat in, you're actually blocking the uptake of glucose. So then when you go back ultimately to eating a diet that has some glucose in it, some carbohydrate, then your diabetes is going to come roaring back with a vengeance. Your cholesterol and triglycerides are going to be up as well. So you're going to be skinny and sick, you know, so we don't want to be skinny, sick, and we don't want to be overly muscular fat. So someplace in between. So we just have to look and assess people. And that's where our wonderful registered dietitian comes in, because she can help assess body composition and change the plate so that we can improve body composition to reverse lifestyle diseases. And lastly, I wanted to talk a little bit about what to do with your grandkids. Now, I have a grandchild, perfect little grandson who's plant-based. So it's going to be really easy when he comes to my house, because he's going to love fruits and vegetables. And, you know, his grandmother and his great-grandmother and his mother's picture are plastered on a cookbook, this plant-based nutrition that has great treats in it as well as great food. And so he's going to love all this. So I've got it easy. Maybe when he starts going to school and people start to challenge him with, you know, Milky Ways and all this other kind of thing, there's going to be some questions that Addie will have to answer. But a lot of people get all besides themselves when their grandkids come over and they won't eat anything. They want to eat pizza bites and, you know, chicken nuggets. And so what do you do? The banana ice cream is not, you know, ice cream made out of bananas and fruits, not sweet enough. What do you do? Well, a lot of times the kids are so used to high sweet, high salt, high fat, that just going back to these regular foods can be a real challenge for them, a real shock. You know, if you're used to eating pure sugar, an apple's not going to be all that sweet. So it's going to take a time for transition, but it ultimately does, and certainly it's better for them. And I think people have to remember when they eat these processed foods, whether it's the pizza bites or chicken nuggets in the box or Tyson's this or whatever, they're processed with genetically modified ingredients, high fructose corn syrup that is, again, genetically modified. So you're giving people, you're giving these kids highly processed, high sugar, high fat, high salt, chemical laden foods that's going to really, really hurt them in the long run. So what do? Well, you make little pizzas. So we have, you know, in the cookbook, the little pizza recipes, and let them dress their own. You know, pick out their favorite toppings. It could be goofy, it could be pineapple, you know, or it can be something they want to put on and make the sauce, participate. It's a way to teach them, you know, a little science on how to put things out and to make things. You can, you know, have a little discussion, but kids like to do things like that. You can make chicken nuggets, you know, using things like, you know, texturized vegetable protein, which is a bit, you know, a bit processed itself, but less, you know, less so, or two ingredient type chicken nuggets that are a little bit different. But there's lots of ways to get around it, or perhaps just do a, you know, a seasoned tofu that's easier to get around, or a tempeh. But kids' taste buds will change if you give them the opportunity, and certainly if you get it there. If you put a Snickers and an orange out, they're going to eat the Snickers. They're not going to eat the orange, especially if they've not been exposed to the orange before. So you can't do that. But you can have a lot of wonderful treats that are healthy around when the grandkids come over and do just fine. And then again, introduce them to foods that. That they'll ultimately, you know, learn to really, really, really like. We have to teach our kids to chew so that their jaw develops, so they don't need $10,000 worth of braces. We also have to give kids fiber. You know, kids, we know that colon cancer is backing up into the people in the age of 40s and 50s, but, you know, a lot of kids are constipated. That can lead to a lot of problems and stomach issues. And GI issues over time, and change in their microbes and irritable bowel and all kinds of things, changes mood, because we know our GI tract is related to our emotions and our psychological well-being with the production of dopamine and serotonin. So feeding kids these foods and expecting them to behave correctly or behave appropriately is kind of, you know, you're asking for trouble when you give people a bunch of chemicals and you expect them to be healthy and happy and well-adjusted. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, I don't think, again, to be a good grandparent, you have to give your kids, grandkids, unhealthy food. And, you know, I don't think your kids are going to be upset with you if you give your grandkids healthy food. They should be upset with you if you continue to give them you know, unhealthy food with a bunch of artificial ingredients. Even if they give them that, they should still also be upset with you if you keep it going. Somebody's got to be the bigger person. So that's my rant and rave. I was going to make it a lot worse. I don't think I made it too negative for today, because I think overall it is positive. I just think we have to stop and look, and, you know, some of the stupid questions that we don't ask and some of the stupid things that we do that don't make any difference and make our life so complicated for what reason? So, you know, enjoy yourself, get out and get some sunshine, go for a run, won't hurt you. Don't wear a mask when you run outside, get good microbes, you know, inhale some good microbes outside this weekend. And, you know, hug your family, hug your dog, hug your cat, hug a tree, touch something, touch someone. Don't be afraid. You can wash your hands real quick afterwards if you need to, but don't make people, you know, especially kids, all paranoid. I think, you know, the old saying is you got to eat a pound of dirt. I think it probably still holds true. So I'm not being cavalier about COVID. People do get sick and die from it. It can be nasty, especially in immunocompromised. But the idea is, let's focus on what you can do. And you can make yourself a lot healthier eating a whole food plant-based diet. You can improve your immune system by getting outside and getting some sunshine. You can improve your mood and your immunity by having a better outlook on life and being around family and eliminating depression and reaching out and helping somebody. So I hope you enjoy your weekend. Thank you for listening. See you next time.